good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, July 6, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Melody.
Welcome back. I miss the listeners, and I miss the producer, Todd, and you too, Dave. We were closed on
Friday. Well, that's nice.
Yes.
Feelings are mutual for what it's worth.
I'm sure. And but it's great to be back. It's a new week. It's a lot of exciting things are happening in the world as we speak. It's a, you know, the more I talk to people, the more frightening it really is becoming. It's staggering when you see these behaviors around this country. And knowing where the place where it most likely is heading. Let's see where gold headed today. We had a nice day in gold. I mean, we had a rally in the stock market, but, you know, what are you going to say about that? You have the Dow up 1170, $1,787. Silver is up 27 cents, $18.39. Platinum was up 22 at 832. And palladium was up 16, 1,993. The USDX today was down 0.36 at 96.78. Crude oil was down 0.02 at 40.63. And the paper markets today, you know, of course, we had the Dow was up big today, but the markets were closed on Friday, so basically this is 2 days worth of trades. You have the Dow up 459 points at 26,287. The NASDAQ was up 226 at 10,433. The S&P was up 1.59%, up 49 points, 3,179. 10-year yield, you know, 0.68. It's been in that range of 0.64 and 70% for eons. Futures gold was $1,795, approaching that $1,800 level, the August contract, $1,795. And let's see what else other goodies are out there. And, of course, all the foreign and Asian markets were strong. They all pumped their markets over the weekend, and China came out and said, good citizens of China, I think it's time you buy some stocks. And they did so. They listened to their command leader and their communist leader, I should say, and they all went and bought stocks. And I saw a headline where the Chinese listens to their leader, they have their supreme leader, and the United States has the Federal Reserve. And that's pretty much the truth. And there was one thing before we head on, there was one thing that I saw, I thought I had it up. They released the Corona stimulus list, and I was just opening it prior to the program, but I figured it was pretty large, so I didn't want to freeze my computer. So I'll look at it tomorrow, and we'll discuss some of those companies that has received stimulus. I'm sure it's not the complete program. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, Dave.
I did, and what I do is stay out of the Excel spreadsheets. Although it is that's where you'll find all the names of those companies that have received at least $150,000 as part of the PPP. There's a breakdown by state, and then there's an overall spreadsheet that shows literally the thousands and thousands of companies. Again, just 150K and over, but it is fascinating. Some of the names, and I mean, including, you know, banks and financial company. I mean, it really spreads the gamut of all types. And yes, there are some relationship issues that I'm certain are merely coincidence. Regardless, Melody, of the fact that we're reading that major K Street lobbying firms were out there acting on behalf of their clients. So, the rich and powerful certainly got their share. I'm not so sure about the rest of them.
Yeah, and I mean, there was really no, what do you want to call it, no test for those who to receive it or not. You know, some of these multinational corporations, as far as I was, they have money in the bank and cash. They should be using that to keep it going, but they shouldn't be getting the bailouts. It should have gone for true companies who don't have the cash in order to keep going, and the ones who really, really needed it. But anyway, it's yeah. Anyone in particular that you noticed that you thought was interesting, or just?
Well, there were a lot. I mean, Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao, who's the wife of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, she got her company got her family business got between $350,000 and $1 million. We don't know exactly how much, because that's the one category. One of the big law firms in Washington, whose chair is David Boies, who's represented some major clients, not the least of whom was Al Gore in the Bush v. Gore Supreme Court case, received between $5 and $10 million.
Oh my gosh.
P.F. Chang, also 5 and 10. The Archdiocese of New York, between 5 and 10. Jared Kushner's father.
The prisoner.
The Joseph Kushner Hebrew Academy got a loan, 1 to 2 million.
Unbelievable.
So on and so on and so on.
Yeah.
Democratic and Republican committees, state committees, got loans as well.
And I'm sure they turned them all into grants, and they're no longer loans, correct?
Hey, that's a good question. A lot of them did. I don't see a number here that says what proportion of them were turned into grants. They say that there's still $132 billion in funding remaining. The average loan, $107,000. Funding supported 51 million jobs. There you go.
Unbelievable. It's business as usual. It's business as usual. It doesn't matter. It's all distractions and headlines, and the bottom line is, and I'm sure it did help some people. Anyway, remember I mentioned that a $10 trillion rally that we've seen in the markets hinges on earnings nobody has a clue about. And that's the problem with this big rally that we have seen. No one has a clue. There is no clarity. There is no, what are people, why is the market going up other than the Federal Reserve pumping money into it? Stock buyback, everything else. There was, I think there's a report. Banks are set to kick off the second quarter reporting season in less than 2 weeks. At first glance, the 44% profit contraction expected for the S&P 500 companies, the worst since 2008, seems at odds with their explosive rally that's restored most of what was lost in the March meltdown. Yet Wall Street pros will know the stock market long ago discounted all that. It's not recent history that matters, but rather expectations for the future. And that's what's murky. That's what's unclear. And it's like, and everything that we read and everything that we talk about, and we even have some good news today. There's some articles that I would think, Dave, that seem a little positive. But
yes,
it's small,
absolutely.
Very small compared to everything else and what is actually happening in our monetary system. So, $10 trillion was added, and it just seems like the markets are not going to quit. And it's baffling that you can have all this social unrest. It's baffling that you can have, I mean, just everything, and everything is being ignored. You know, and yes, algorithms take out the emotions from trade, but we saw what they did in March. And I believe it's going to happen again, even with inflation. But, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about the dollar and where we think that's going to be headed. But for the, you know, we talked about the Shanghai Composite, that soared almost 6%. But hey, their investors were told to buy by the government. Go out and buy, Dave. So, you know, when you have a billion some people that can go out and buy stocks, you know, I guess you'll get a 6% gain on the stock market.
Yeah. How about it? Yeah, the Shanghai Composite broke through its, what would that be? Well, it's 850-day long-term moving average. One analyst said, who follows the Asian markets, the market continues to believe that central bank, the People's Bank of China, will ease more, seen by China's recent credit and monetary expansion. Of course, they're not only not alone, they're part of a big crowd of easing across the earth. But in China, he said, the bull comes as swiftly as it leaves. So the reverse must be true, Melody. It leaves as quickly as it comes.
Yes.
So watch out, ladies and gentlemen, particularly you millennials who were reading seem to have been fascinated by the Chinese stock markets and are starting to invest more in it. Be careful. Make sure you know what you're doing. And if you want to hear about the alternative, the safe haven alternative, give us a call.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no safe haven at all in the Chinese stock market. I mean, if everybody believes they lied about the pandemic, what do you think they would lie about their paper markets? I mean, geez, Luigi, if these millennials are in there, I mean, it's nobody really understands what goes on behind the scenes. You know, we had U.S. services, the services industry activity. Of course, that rebounded sharply in June with, you know, restaurants and everything beginning to open up. Well, I guess that's, am I reading that right, Dave?
Well, yeah, I mean, sure, they opened up, but now the resurgence is forcing a reclosure in some of the big states, namely Texas, we're reading the most about. Threatening that emerging recovery.
The Institute for Supply Management said this morning that its non-manufacturing activity index jumped to a reading of 57.1 last month. I mean, that's the highest since February. It has bounced back from a reading of 41.8 in April, and that was the lowest since March of 2009. We all know that the reading above 50 indicates growth. The report followed the ISM's manufacturing survey last week, showing factory activity rebounded. We're going to see all these types of, but you're right when you talk about businesses reclosing. When you're beginning to see some of these states and the numbers, it's kind of staggering. Even though they might be limited certain areas and so forth in those states, it's still staggering, the numbers. And I think, you know,
they
a lot
sure
of
have.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about particularly the densely populated states, California, Florida, Texas. Texas less densely populated, of course, than the other two. But these flare-ups that started in late June prompted several states to scale back or even pause their reopenings. And as Melody indicated, you know, hitting restaurants and bars the hardest. The ISM survey's measure of new orders for the services industry increased to a reading of 61.6 last month, up 20 points from the prior month. Also, an increase in export orders, with order backlogs having been swelled in the months leading up to June. And the survey's index of service industry employment rose to a reading of 43.1, up from 30, roughly 32 in May. Now, though this measure has pulled off the 30 in April, last seen in 1997, it was at odds with the government report last Friday showing non-farm payrolls surging by a record 4.8 million jobs in June, service sector accounting for about 4.3 million of them.
Well,
Melody.
I guess the U.S. has passed 130,000 deaths for COVID. And hey, even if someone there is wrong, that's a pretty big number, considering, we're not sure where everybody is at. And there was a headline showing that the White House hopes Americans will grow numb. Or do you think we're just going to get tired of these numbers, Dave? We're just going to start not paying attention to what's really happening, and those who believe it's a hoax, or those who, I mean, what do you do with this?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I can't see it happening, although I mean, growing numb, well, I don't know. Numb is a possibility. And that's why it's probably so important that the federal agencies who oversee this do their best to report the truth, and all these numbers.
Well, you mentioned, or I mentioned about the stock markets and about the messages, mixed messages for investors. And here's another one: banks. I mean, they all had their difficulties in their stress tests. The regulations were all reduced, for all these major banks and so forth. And they're pretty confident that extremely loose monetary policy will be required for a very long time to support growing debt levels worldwide, propping up the liquidity along the global equity and bond prices. Dave, I just can't imagine that people who understand this, or even if they don't understand it, but just know that the governments are pumping money into the system with this growing debt levels, that it's okay, that it's not going to matter somewhere down the road. More debt, more liquidity, more asset reflation. The J.P. Morgan strategist wrote, who also forecast a $16 trillion increase in worldwide debt this year, that would push the combination of private and public sector borrowing to a record high, $200 trillion by year end. Let that sink in. We'll be right back. Think about that during the break, and we'll be right back. Thank you for listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on shortwave radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. Prices, you know, 25 cents here, 25 cents there on those silver ingles. They are beginning to come down. So, I mean, for all of those of you who were patient and knew you would have another day, another week, another month, you're going to be rewarded. You're going to be able to get more silver. And if you listen to me, you're going to get rewarded. You're going to have a little more silver for your money. So they're coming down slowly. There's still good buys. And, you know, my prices are, you know, lower than anywhere on the website that I have found. By a lot, by a buck or two, depending on how many you're looking to purchase. That's a lot. So, but wholesale prices dropped another 25 cents today. So, a good deal. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And let me see here. We were talking about how, again, investors are expecting this loose monetary policy to just continue forever. There's not going to be any change. And that growth will overtake and everything will be fine. How can anybody believe that? So again, pushing the combination of private and public sector borrowing to a record high at $200 trillion by the year end, that will lead to higher savings rates. I'm not sure how that will work when your rates are next to nothing, Dave.
Well, if investors decide to put their savings into IRAs, into not their savings, their cash into savings, and those savings are IRAs, whether they're pre-tax or post-tax, that in theory could have a short-term impact for the assets like equities in particular, even bonds to a lesser extent. And of course they're going to get 5 or 10% of them looking at gold, a little bit less in silver, and those who park portion of their savings there, Melody, we know that they're going to end up regretting that as soon as a couple of more months down the road, when the black swan, whatever it may be, hit. And this very shaky market does what we've been saying it's going to do for a couple of years now, and just, you know, someone's going to push a button and there's just going to be, you know, a big hole that opens up and swallows up these stock indexes.
I know, and you know, keeping cash is one of the worst things that you could do, but go ahead.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, it'll render this increased liquidity that the Fed and other central banks are pushing all around the world, or it will render that moot at best, and it may be moot, but it won't be irrelevant because of what will have happened to the value of your investment sleeves in general. Unless, again, you're parking a good chunk of your savings in gold and silver. So we know that total money creation could exceed 15 trillion or more by the next the middle of next year. In the U.S., M2 money supply, essentially total money supply, has risen $3 trillion so far this year to now it's over $18 trillion at the end of June. It was $17 trillion at the end of May, according to Fed figures. And, of course, that's an all-time high, Melody.
Well, you know, and here's another, too big to fail, you know, part of the problem. They need to fail. You know, they do all the, you know, giving advice to governments, to our government and so forth, but it's Goldman Sachs. But, hey, they're lowering their economic forecast with the virus cases that are rising. And they say it's going to limit growth. In the third quarter, the bank's economists now see a third quarter gross domestic product rising by 25% on an annualized basis. That's down from the initial estimate of 33%, with a reduction due primarily to concerns that increasing cases in states such as Florida, Texas, Arizona, it's really going to slow the pace of reopening. And I think you're going to see more states with increased numbers. These guys just happen to be the major three, and I think along with California. GDP fell 5% in the first quarter, part of a mostly self-induced recession. Remember, I don't know if it was partly self-induced, but we were in a recession. We are in a recession. That recession has not gone away. But that 5% in the first quarter, it was the biggest one-quarter drop since the fourth quarter of 2008. Even if Goldman's reduced call is correct, that would still mark, by a wide margin, the biggest quarterly rebound since at least 1948. But again, look at the...
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Good luck with that. I mean, Jan Hatzius, who's Goldman's chief economist, insists he sees reason for optimism. Manufacturing, construction quickly turned back to their expansion after suffering their worst rollback since the crisis of the late 2000s. Again, plus the economy adding another 4.8 million jobs. This is Hatzius, and what he's saying is the reasons for still generally optimistic rebounds coming imminently. He says, although tensions with China will persist, regardless of the outcome of the presidential election, and we'll talk about one or two of them in the next segment if we get to them, he believes a re-escalation of the trade war between the two economies will be less likely, and the prospects for international cooperation on vital issues he sees improving. Still, Goldman expects that U.S. stocks will underperform against their global competitors as the U.S. underperforms in the near term as it partly reverses its overly hasty reopening in the consumer sector. Melody.
Well, you know what, Dave? Throughout this crisis, there's been kind of two kinds of job losses. One that was due to the virus and a second caused by, you know, the economy, economic distress. Now, you know, the first category is pretty straightforward, where it's physically dangerous to operate close to customers, such as jobs in restaurants or salons. The second is simply jobs lost due to the economic contraction. Of course, the two are fluid, and it seems very possible that millions of people who were initially laid off, expecting it to be temporary, will really end up having just losing their job permanently. Mm-hmm. Last Friday's, it actually came out Thursday, jobs report was better than expected. I don't know. I didn't look at the bottom of the report this week. I don't know if it read that these are miscalculations like the month before. So who knows if these are or not. It was better than expected. but the number of people losing their jobs on a permanent basis continues to rise. In just 4 months, the number of people who characterize their layoff as permanent has jumped by over 1.6 million.
Yeah, there's one estimate we talked about last week. 41% of laid-off workers believe their furloughs will be permanent. Now, by contrast, after the official start of the recession during the last crisis, it took 11 months to see this many permanent layoffs. And here we are, March, April, May, June, you know, four, five, half the time, less than half the time. Jed Kolko of Indeed, the job hunting company, explained this category, which admittedly is subjective, is arrived at by asking workers whether they expect to get their old job back within 6 months. If they say no, they're described as permanent. Well, that could be up to for some debate there, Melody, but Kolko's own measure, what he calls the core unemployment rate, has risen 2 points in just the last 4 months, also faster than at the start of the Great Recession. Now, the glass half full view is that perhaps persistent headline unemployment in the teens, as some were envisioning not long ago, may not pan out. Huh. What's worrisome is that even with the reopening by one measure, we're still losing jobs at a much faster clip than at the start of the last crisis. I don't think we've seen the worst yet, Melody.
I don't think we have either, and that's a sad thing to state. But I mean, we were heading down this road for how long? So we're finally here. I take no pleasure in saying that we are by any means, because it's going to be tough for very many people, and they're already having a tough time. So, you know, your weekly newsletter, Dave, is going to be out later today. And I think you're writing about the devaluation of the dollar.
Yeah, it's as listeners know, countries with a fiat currency, which is to say every country on earth, manipulate the value of their currency virtually all the time, the U.S. included. But now, independent economic advisor Hugh Hendry, not a household name, but he says the U.S. could, in his words, change the world by devaluing the dollar. He believes that the Fed's buying assets like government, corporate, and now municipal bonds to provide more liquidity in the economy isn't working as intended. So rather than focusing on bonds to stimulate the economy, he argues that U.S. policymakers should concentrate on the value of the country's own currency. Hendry said simply publishing or expanding these inert central bank reserves and trying to scare us all to death that they're actually printing real money is a fraud.
Mm. On one hand, you write that the Fed's recent actions have driven up total money supply to the U.S. to an all-time high, a little over $23 trillion as of the end of May. It was $18.2 trillion, or 21% lower as recently as January 1st of 2019. So instead, he claims that the underlying problem is a shortage of dollars in the global market, Dave.
Yeah, in the global market. He said America has decided over several decades to impose a global dollar standard, a monetary standard on the rest of the world. And he adds, it's one thing to be the king, but you have to behave like the king, too. So, he says, if you're going to impose a dollar standard on the rest of the world, you have to stand by and provide sufficient liquidity for it. And that's exactly where they've been failing, they meaning the Fed. Hendry reminds us that the widespread sell-off in the stock and gold markets in March, when global markets plummeted on early fears of the virus, was due in large part to investors having to sell assets for cash to repay margin debt, money that they had borrowed to buy investments. Not a good idea. While he believes that the Fed dollar swap lines were successful then at holding supply back and putting their thumb in the dam, Henry proposes an alternative approach to better support the economy. In terms of stopping these periodic dramatic flares, he said, wouldn't it be better to target not bond prices, but instead to target the actual value of the dollar? What do you think, Melody?
Well, I know you're going to disagree with this as I disagree with this now, so I'm going to say that right now. He says that the dollar is the new gold standard. No, it isn't. Mm. No, it isn't. And he says that it would be better to devalue it than to continue focusing on QE. But that's what they're going to do. I mean, they will devalue the dollar. It's written in the cards. And just last week, he says when he looks at the world of macro, he says he thinks it's telling us that we need a lower print on the dollar itself, Dave.
Well, he followed up with this too, Melody, and I'm with you. He said, I think we need the Treasury, not the Fed, to step up to the plate and tell the world we're going to target 70 or 60 on the dollar index, and that would change the world. Now, we're not going to go into the dollar index. The article does. It gives readers, in this case, some background on the index and the other currencies the dollar's measured against, show you a little bit of history in where the dollar index has been. But remember this, gold is an asset. As such, it has an intrinsic value, even though the value can fluctuate over time. And listeners know the general rule that when the value of the dollar decreases compared to other currencies around the world, the price of gold tends to rise in U.S. dollar terms. That's because gold becomes less expensive in other currencies. In short, as the price of gold or any other precious metal moves lower, there tend to be more buyers. Demand for it increases. And the reverse is true as well. The value of the dollar U.S. moves higher, gold does tend to fall in price as it becomes more expensive in other currencies. It doesn't always hold true, but as a general rule, that's what we see over time.
Yes, we all know that the dollar is going to be devalued. I mean, it goes without saying, government needs... and that's all creates inflation, and government needs inflation, and that's how they're going to get inflation, and they need it for their debt. So it's just a matter, to me, it's still a matter of time, but it is an interesting way in how he talks about how they can devalue the dollar. And we're heading into a break right now. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 800-375-4188. You know, coming back from the holiday, it really doesn't seem like there is a lot of news, but yet there isn't. And it's, again, you know, we're just always trying to locate financial news and so forth with the markets being closed. And of course, the big news was on the paper markets today as far as the numbers and everything. And, you know, we talk about the dollar, the amount of money and being punneled into the, you know, here was an interesting article. I'm not sure if we have it in the thing, but 13 million gig workers are getting unemployment benefits, 41% of the total. Nearly 13 million Americans are getting unemployment benefits through the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program. The PUA program is meant for the self-employed. Usually we hear about the other program, right, Dave? But this is the PUA. It's meant
right.
meant for the self-employed, independent contractors, gig economy workers, those with limited recent work history, and those looking for part-time work, among others. The PUA recipients account for about 41% of all the people getting the unemployment benefits. So around 12.9 million Americans are collecting unemployment through this PUA. So it's kind of interesting. Another program. I didn't know there was a separate one for these group of people.
Yeah. That's the one provides the extra $600 a week through July 25th. And the big part of that provision provided for the first time, or certainly the first time in recent memory, an unemployment benefit for gig workers, self-employed workers, independent contractors, who I think with little, if any, exception don't qualify for state-provided unemployment assistance otherwise. Mm. So, the pandemic unemployment benefit.
Mm. Yes. What else do we want to talk about? Senator Bob Menendez, New Jersey, Kevin Cramer, North Dakota, they've introduced a bill that would prohibit retailers from declining cash payments. Didn't we just talk last week about taking all the cash away? And now they're introduced a bill that would prohibit retailers and mall owners, including Nordstrom and Simon Malls, have encouraged the use of contactless transactions such as Apple Pay to minimize the spread of the virus in their stores and properties. But these senators warn that should any retailer ban cash entirely, it would be discriminatory. About 20% of U.S. households have no or limited access to checking and savings account. Of those households, about 6% are unbanked, meaning they have no access at all. And as weekly jobless claims grow by the millions, the number of Americans without access to bank accounts may rise. Refusing cash discriminates, Mendez says, against certain population, denies people equal access to the same goods or services. The Payment Choice Act targets businesses that refuse to accept cash as payment, post signs stating that cash will not be accepted, or charge a higher price for cash over other forms of payment. Now, I certainly do believe charging a higher price for cash over other forms, that is wrong. But again, we're back to telling businesses what they can and can't do. If a business doesn't want to accept cash, well, the person who has cash can go someplace else and buy what they need. Let the business owner run his business. He's trying to protect his employees, his customers, himself, his family. Keep your nose out of business. And the fines are significant.
It doesn't say who's going to enforce this, but the bill does propose a maximum fine of $2,500 for the first offense, $5,000 for the second. A similar bill introduced in the House by a New Jersey congressman last year. Now, some state governments also have legislation prohibiting card-only policies, targeting the retailers and restaurants that were experimenting with ways to minimize cash before all nuts broke loose. Massachusetts already bans retail establishments from discrimination against cash buyers. Companies have sought to speed up their operations and compete against the efficiency operated by tech giants like Amazon. While credit cards often result in fees for businesses ranging from 2 to 5%, cash can be more cumbersome and timely to manage for some of them, and certainly with the virus, risky. So, interesting. I don't see this going anywhere in the Senate, but the fact that it's got early bipartisan sponsorship may make it interesting, Melody. Once again, strange bedfellows in this game. We'll see where it goes.
Nobody's using cash. Everybody's, you know, because they don't want the cash. So why force businesses to take cash? You know, it's just. Anyway, I think I remember I said this a long, long time ago. It might have been on Beth's program. About these malls that are being vacated, you know, where the anchor shop is leaving. Oh, and something else about that other. I just want to go back to where the about the cash. That really hurts the little businesses too. I think sometime more so than big business. But anyway, let's get back to the malls. I said they ought to develop housing in these vacant malls. And in the Linwood suburb of Seattle, developers are turning a big part of a 41-year-old Alderwood Mall into a 300-unit apartment complex. This is a grand experiment in transforming struggling malls into some much-needed affordable housing. Of course, some conversions may be the best use of vacant space across an over-retailed country. Stories such as this comes as one retail analyst is predicting that as many as 100,000 malls. That's a number. 100,000 malls across America could close by 2025. Shifts in consumer behavior was already hurting the brick-and-mortar stores. Shutdowns and stay-at-home orders have accelerated the trend, bringing these malls to a standstill. And shopping centers, it turns out, are often built in locations that would be perfect for commuters who work downtown but can't afford to live there. Now the challenge now is to create community and transit-oriented developments, not just replace stores with apartments. So this country is certainly lacking affordable housing. And I think if it's done properly, I think it would be a good thing, Dave. So,
yeah, indeed. Some places are getting creative. There's a mall about 20 miles from where I live that has lost two of its major anchors, Sears and Penny's, on the verge of losing its third of four. They've transformed about maybe a quarter of the mall space has been bought up or perhaps leased. I'm not 100% sure by one of the big hospital networks that serves southeastern Pennsylvania. But adjacent, there's a significantly sized parking garage that served and still does serve the mall. But right next to it, on mall property they've sold to a developer who's put in a really sharp looking, I think it's 1,100 unit apartment, upscale apartment complex with some affordable rent. I don't know how that's characterized, but it's sort of they call it an adaptive reuse of the land, and of course they're going to be able to use the mall parking lot parking for tenants and visitors. So it's already beginning to happen in different parts of the country. If that 100,000 is anywhere close, I'm sure that's got to include strip malls.
Yeah, probably.
We have the potential to see a lot of affordable housing in this country.
So let's not make it too. If we've got to keep it, you know. Anyway, that's another story. Let's talk about. I talked about earlier about the silver prices are coming down. We have Mexico released its mine supply data for April. The world's top two silver producers have seen their combined silver output decline by 53%. To give you an idea of the amount of lost silver mine supply from Mexico and Peru, it was more than all the global gold production in that month. Actually, it was 1.5 months worth of world gold mine output. According to Mexico's INEGI, silver output in April fell to 301 metric tons compared to 500 in March, a 40% decline. The average monthly output over the previous year was 498 metric tons. Peru's Ministry of Mines and Energy reported a 70% decline in the country's silver production in April. Peru's average monthly output over the previous year was 320 metric tons. Still a lot of silver.
Still a lot of silver. Combining both countries' total silver output in April from Mexico and Peru was down over 400 metric tons. That's about 14 million ounces, Melody. And with the continuing reduction in global economic activity during the second half of this year, demand for precious metals will undoubtedly soar. So be prepared, ladies and gentlemen. For all your gold and silver needs, call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Now, in the past, Melody, have you noticed that when there are when there's news of major production declines, do you see a big increase in the demand and thus prices of silver?
Usually, well, you know, the declines, the demand for silver for various products and so forth coming through this with the virus, you know, there's less demand, thus the shrinkage in the silver production. I think this time's a little different. I think it depends on why the reasons are that you might see mines shut down. We see the price rising. So, and people have, you know, people do tend to buy when prices rise also. The smart people buy when prices are low, but human nature tells us to buy also when it's rising. I think lots of times, you know, I mean, over the past how many years we've seen silver at such low prices that you had a lot of silver mines that had to reduce their output, you know, here in the States and other places, and it reduces the supply of things like bars and so forth. So, and then there's usually other products. But this year it's different because we've had such a tough time with the silver due to the mint shutting down and different mines have shut down. I don't know if maybe some of this decline was based on the virus. I don't think they gave any actual reasons, but the mines could have been shut down because of the virus where they just didn't produce,
yeah,
and therefore.
Good
so
point.
I think we just need to know a little bit more details. When I see people buy, and over all these years, You really see people purchasing gold and silver to a bigger degree is when there is some sort of action in the dollar and when it's going down and the market falls. You know, when the market started, and it's different because you can see movements in, you know, people with bigger money. People with bigger money are coming in now. We've seen, you know, more trades with bigger amounts of funds coming in. And they're not going into IRAs. People are taking physical delivery of it. So this is something a little different. Not quite like 2008. The problem with what we had in March was the buying was like in 2008, but it really didn't carry through because the stock market turned around so quick. During the Great Recession of 2008, people, they were just unloading their money because and as they should have. And we'll have to talk a little bit more about that on another day, Dave. I know I see we're out of time. And it really is important to get perspective on people's buying habits and the various markets and what moves people. But the key thing is you got to do it. And it's difficult to make that change out of paper into gold. And that's what the paper markets are betting on. Don't let them win. You win by giving us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
And I'll see you Wednesday. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be here tomorrow with Butch Paul. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.